We have made it. One of the best betting weeks of the year. We've got 6 island games, 3 Thanksgiving, 1 Black Friday, Sunday night, Monday night. Always like to load up on those, right? Get some rooting interest when there's only one game to focus on. So we're going to start out with those 3 Thanksgiving games and the Black Friday game, and then we'll hit some other spots on Sunday that we like. But Judah, how was your week 12 betting wise?
Week was solid. Nothing too crazy. I came very, very close to hitting a 700-1 SGP on the Dolphins-Patriots game. Yeah. Needed a couple more Drake May rushing yards. That would have been a legendary hit. But hey, we are so blessed. 6 island games. Does it get better than this? I don't think so.
And I was wondering if you were on the right pieces in that Dolphins game, because that's one we talked about. I was on Tyreek Hill and Achan in my sole Dolphins SGP, so I was not on the right pieces at all. It was Jonnu and Waddle. We finally got the Waddle breakout game, but yeah, that would have been a big one to go into Week 13 with. Before we kick off with this Thanksgiving slate, we are running a Black Friday promo, 35% off annual subs with the promo code SCORE35. It's open from now through December 2nd. So all of these angles that we talk about are grounded in PFF data, mixed in with some of our own ball knowledge. So if you want to dive through into that data, there are grades and stats live now on Premium Stats during the games. They get shut back down shortly after the game for review. But that's a good tool to use for live betting if you're just trying to look at usage, which players are seeing more targets, which players are playing more snaps. Can get all of that 35% off through December 2nd with the promo code SCORE35. And we're going to kick off with the first Thanksgiving game, Chicago Bears at Detroit Lions. Detroit is 10.5-point favorites, 48.5-point total. And I don't really have any concerns about Detroit being able to move the ball. I think we're kind of to the point where Detroit's offense is pretty matchup agnostic. They're good rushing offense. They're good passing offense. You can get into some trouble if you disrupt what they want to do. But like we talked about with Philly last week, like it's not easy to disrupt what they want to do. They're really good running the ball, and they're really good at that play action game off of the run. And Chicago's defense, there might still be a case where you still have some residuals from early in the season where Chicago was first in EPA per pass play allowed weeks 1 to 6. But since their bye in week 7, they've dropped to 22nd against the pass by EPA per play. So you have had more opportunities against them. And they play a heavy dose of cover 3. Detroit sees a lot of cover 3. They're good against it. That's part of the whole idea of being able to run the ball, going heavier. You get that safety to come down, and you get those single high looks to attack. And Detroit's done well against that since Ben Johnson's been there as offensive coordinator. So I like this spot for the Detroit offense. I think Sam Laporta might be my favorite target in that offense, especially if we don't get Amon-Ra St. Brown. I know he's a little bit banged up, still waiting on injury news there. But Chicago's given up the 4th most receiving yards to inline tight ends this season. And Laporta, that's primarily where he lines up in that offense. So I think it could be a good game for him. And then the question really becomes, can Chicago keep pace? And can we get a competitive game that continues to push that passing offense for Detroit?
Yeah, I think that's right. The Lions side, I think they struggled early in the season, right? Getting off the against Tampa Bay, but really in the past like 7-8 weeks, no one's been able to stop them. I'm definitely monitoring the injuries. David Montgomery did not practice. Taylor Decker did not practice. You talk about disruption. And I think when things go right and they create so many good situations for themselves, there's no one better on offense right now. But right, it's not as though this is the Chiefs or the Bills, where even if things kind of go off structure, there's just so much in the, or even the Ravens at this point, the quarterback's ability to create that they're like really so agnostic. So it would not be shocking at all for the Lions to continue to steamroll them. But the Bears still have, even amidst their struggles, been able to generate a bunch of these disruption plays. They're still kind of at the top of the league in perfect coverage rate and in their ability to generate disruption pressure. And especially if we start to see kind of some injuries on the Detroit side, I wouldn't be totally shocked to see Chicago put together a better performance.
Yeah.
But yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, it, on the Chicago offense side, like, we talked about when Hutchinson went down, like, there are legitimate concerns about this Lions defense. Will they still be able to generate the same pressure? Because the cornerbacks, even though they added bodies in Carlton Davis, Terry and Arnold, teams were still being able to attack that unit a little bit. But since he went down, they're second in EPA allowed per pass play. Some of that is turnovers. They've been able to force turnovers. Brian Branch, Kirby Joseph, one of the better safety tandems in the NFL on the back end. But I do think there are some scenarios where Chicago is able to move the ball. You saw it last week against the Vikings, another good defense. It was kind of, I actually bet Bears under 17.5 team total, and it was looking good until the last 2 minutes. And then Chicago was able to put up 10 points and get back in the game. But I think Keenan Allen is kind of the guy in the Bears receiving core I'm going to be looking at. 27% target rate versus man. It's by far the highest on this offense. DJ Moore hasn't really produced a ton against man. Roma Dunze has kind of been up and down. So the other angle there is Lions are dead last in yards allowed to slot receivers this year. That's primarily where Keenan Allen operates. So I think there's some pretty strong angles to pointing to him having a decent game. And then the other area I think Chicago might be able to have an advantage is Caleb Williams' legs. We've seen it the last couple weeks. He's quicker to scramble. Right, he's more willing to scramble since week six. He has an 8% scramble rate. That's fifth highest in the NFL. And not necessarily as much this year, though you saw it early last week with Anthony Richardson. But the Lions have given up a lot of rushing yards to quarterbacks since Aaron Glenn got there. Most rushing yards allowed to quarterbacks of any defense in the NFL since he took over as defensive coordinator. You typically see that with man coverage defenses. They play a lot of man, less eyes on the quarterback. So I think Allen receiving and Williams rushing are probably the areas I want to go on this offense.
Yeah. No, I think you bring up a lot of points that I also wanted to touch on. On the Lions defensive front, the points about turnovers, I think, is like especially true. That they've generated a ton. Like that EPA number is driven a lot by turnovers, but it's also it is less fluky when you are winning by as much as the Lions have been for so many of these games. It's like teams are going to get more aggressive. They're going to try and force more balls in. You're going to generate more interceptions that way. And there's almost some trade-off there of like, first off, the Colts must have had 200 yards taken off by penalties. That was outrageous watching that game. It was just like, Colts have a 30-yard play, holding. There were so many yards left on the field. And since Hutchinson's gone down, like, pretty much consistently, with the exception of the Mac Jones game, they're allowing like 6.5-7 yards per attempt. The defense, I think, is like a real interesting case of they're going to generate turnovers, I think, at an above average rate. Turnovers are generally fluky, but they find themselves in situations such that they are going to be able to produce turnovers. But if we make it conditional on a game state that they're not leading by so much, I think the equation is very different. And we've talked about Caleb Williams for a bit on this show, and talking about his time to throw and how that's really been a leading indicator for his success. He starts out the season kind of like in this 2.7 to 3 range through the bye. I think the bye was in week 7, I believe. And Caleb Williams is pretty good. And those kind of weeks 4, 5, 6 leading into the bye, he like seemingly turns the corner, has that great game in London. And it looks good for the Bears. Outside of the bye, Caleb Williams' time to throw then sits between 3 and 3.5 seconds. The what I call quarterback-induced pressures, which are pressures that are not disruption pressures, skyrockets when he's holding the ball for so long. The efficiency of the offense completely tanks. Thomas Brown comes in the last couple games, and his time to throw is way down. Last week, it was at 2.5 seconds, and that includes that disastrous play when Caleb Williams is just holding the ball in the pocket for like 9 seconds, just waiting. And like that is almost the, if you're a film guy, like that is the indicative play, I think, of Caleb Williams' season, which is like everything else from that game is to your point. He's making very quick decisions. He's scrambling a lot more because he's not holding the ball in the pocket. But the downside is exactly that play of just like he has so much time and he holds onto the ball forever. But I think almost the frame of mind I have in betting this game and in attacking this game is, let's say that Caleb Williams' last couple of weeks where if time to throw really is this indicator. Let's say that is the truth of what he will be going forward, which is frankly really, really good over the last couple of weeks, and almost put the team on his back to beat the Vikings. This line is not 10.5. It's not 10. It's not even close to that. It's somewhere between 7 and 10. And like, why not play that tail? Why not play the tail of actually let's think that there is some signal in how Caleb Williams has operated this offense and in understanding kind of how crucial time to throw is given his play style. And I think the Lions defense is like, they're really pass dependent. We don't really have a good sample of them in spot because they've been leading for so many games. We don't have a good sample of them kind of playing in a neutral game state. I'm not sure how good this defense is, and they're dealing with more injuries. Carlton Davis is likely not going to give this a go. So I actually really like if you're asking me to bet on medians, I think like if you force me to take a spread here, I would take the Lions. But if you're asking me to play a tail, I think it's the Bears. I think it's Caleb Williams continuing to kind of play in this style. The Lions defense maybe being a little bit worse than we expect. And yes, the offense is probably going to score points, but given the market pricing here, you can get some really, really juicy odds. And the Lions are stopping the run. The Bears are not going to run on the Bears are not going to run on the Lions. I think if they're going to win, it's going to be through Caleb Williams. You can build some very intriguing SGPs. Caleb Williams over attempts, Bears winning. You can get some, 50-1s, 65-1s out there for basically telling a pretty simple story in the grand scheme of things. And as we saw from the Panthers Chiefs last week, and in virtually any game, like crazy things happen. But the Cowboys won as 10.5 point underdogs. The NFL has some weird and wacky things. Turnovers are a fluke, and especially if Chicago can bring out some disruption, it's not that crazy, I think, for the Bears to pull this one out. So I'm going to be on some Bears alts. I might even bet the Lions spread too, for many of the reasons we talked about. But I think there's a real mass kind of on the Bears passing here.
It's a compelling argument. You're talking me into these Bears SGPs here, because I do like specific things on that side of the ball that I think you can tie into those. And then just to summarize, I talked about Keenan Allen. I talked about Williams rushing. I think Laporta's over at 35.5 is my favorite, just straight bet on the line sign in terms of receiving. But there's a lot to like in this game, even though it's above a 10-point spread and looks pretty gross on the surface. I think there's some good angles here. Speaking of gross, New York Giants at Dallas Cowboys, 3.5-point favorites for the Cowboys coming off that win against Washington. What a wild ending, man. The Hail Mary, not a Hail Mary, but basically a Hail Mary to Terry McLaurin, the missed extra point. A lot going on at the end of that game. But we saw Dallas be able to move the ball a little bit better on offense than they did. At least it's hard not to move the ball better than they did in that first game against the Eagles when Cooper Rush came in. But looked a little bit more competent against Washington. And this is a matchup. We talked about it last week. We were both on Tampa Bay -5.5. Tampa Bay blew out the Giants. This is a bad football team right now. It's a bad defense. And I think there's some angles here on Dallas, but I'm interested what your kind of take on this game is.
Yeah, well, I would love to know. I was playing quarterback right before we started recording. Ryan Dable came out and said that DeVito is not 100% to play. I don't know what that means. I think I'm going to assume it's DeVito just because that is at least what we're being led to believe. And it's for many of the same things we talked about last week, just like DeVito is a sack machine, right? We highlighted the pressure to sack rate last week. And last season, DeVito had a 38% pressure to sack rate, and the next worst was like 29%. So that's just a huge, huge gap, and you're not going to move the ball in offense. And since Micah Parsons has come back, the Dallas secondary is still atrocious, but the pass rush has been good. And I think there's just, if you're going to generate some sort of pressure on DeVito, it's almost like you're begging for stalled drives, considering how many sacks he takes, and you're just not going to be able to sustain an offense if you're being pressured on whatever it is, 30-40% of the plays, and then of that percent, like a third of them are sacks. It's not sustainable. So I certainly cannot back the Giants if DeVito's in. I think Locke presents an interesting case. And I would be very, very curious where his props open up, because I think he can mitigate a little bit of that pressure. He still takes plenty of sacks, but the degree is very different, and he's going to chuck it deep. And this is a Dallas secondary that is vulnerable to that. So DeVito in, I think it's just similar type of story where the Giants are just going to run so few plays because they can't generate offense. They had like 25 yards of total offense. The Bucs defense is bad. They can generate some sort of pressure. It's almost like an equivalent matchup, actually, where Tampa Bay secondary is really bad, and if you can get past kind of that quick pressure front where they were like sixth best over the past couple months, then you can have success against them. It's kind of the same of Dallas, and I think we see something fairly similar if DeVito is in, and maybe a little bit less so with Locke. And then I guess on the other side, and I'm certainly curious where you land. Dallas has been passing a lot, even with Cooper Rush. They're just like they're at like 70% neutral pass rate. Like they're letting Rush unleash it. And this is a bad Giants defense. We talked a lot about how their success was unsustainable. That when the team doesn't generate quick pressure, they have the worst EPA in the NFL by a lot. They had a crazy kind of pressure to sack rate that has regressed over the course of a season. This is not a good defense. And the props are low on Rush. I'm seeing some like 200s there. And if Dallas is throwing the ball, especially if it's DeVito, because they're running 65, 70 plays, if he's throwing it 40 times, these props are mispriced. And I think there's some intriguing builds there. I don't think it's a game I'm betting on the spread. If Locke's in, I think I probably lean slightly to the Cowboys. If DeVito is in, but definitely curious your thoughts here. And I amaze myself now as I'm talking about this game. You're asking, like, all right, we got like Cooper Rush, Tommy DeVito, or Cooper Rush, Drew Locke on Thanksgiving. Like, does it get worse than this? And yet, there's still somehow always place to be had, value to kind of generate.
There's always money to make. That's
always
that's the
money
key.
To make.
If I'm betting a spread, I want DeVito in. Like, I'm less curious about that if Locke is in. The reason I like Dallas, and I've talked at length in multiple weeks about how bad this Dallas team is. Like, take that into account. But everything is so concentrated around who is getting the ball in this offense right now, especially if Jake Ferguson. I don't really know what Jake Ferguson's status is, but he missed last week. Without him, CeeDee Lamb got 10 targets. No one else got above 4. Like, Rico Dowdle, they have gone super pass heavy, but Rico Dowdle got 19 carries. No other running back had more than 3. Like, it's Lamb and Dowdle. And this Giants defense is bad. And the only real strength they had, which you hit on, was they've been very good when they've been able to generate pressure. But Cooper Rush is getting rid of the ball so quickly that you're not going to get a ton of opportunities to get pressure. His average time to throw is 2.3 seconds since he came in. That's lower than Tua, and Tua's kind of the outlier in terms of time to throw. So the ball is getting out super quick. The Giants have struggled all year when the quarterback gets the ball out in 2.5 seconds or less. 31st in the NFL in terms of defensive efficiency when that's the case. You saw that with Baker last week. He had an average time to throw around 2.5 seconds. They're just giving up these open, quick targets. And even as bad as the Dallas offense has been, like you said, Cooper Rush's line is around 200 yards. CeeDee Lamb's is in the 60s. Like, Rico Dowdle, even as a receiver, he's been getting some looks in the passing game. He's pretty much they've realized that Ezekiel Elliott should not be on the field, and they don't really have any other running backs. So it's Dowdle in kind of a bell cow role. So building something around Rush, Lamb, Dowdle, and maybe Cowboys alts if DeVito's in, like, yeah, I think that's what I'm going to be on in this game. And then maybe you add on a Tracy over 62.5 rushing or something like that for the inverse, because the Dallas run defense is still bad. Tracy has big playability. We've seen it this year. If he breaks off a 40-yard run, just because that's really the only way the Giants probably move the ball, then you get some nice juice on the odds there.
Yeah, I like that. I would even just add, you can use the same thing for DeVito Rush if he's in there. I think that's probably kind of the... You're going to need something to keep the game semi-close. And I like think that's certainly a path of DeVito ripping off a couple scrambles. That is with how he had any success in the past last year. But on the same builds here.
We'll move on to the night game on NBC. Miami Dolphins at Green Bay Packers. Packers are 3.5-point favorites, 47.5-point total. And when I was initially looking at this game, I think my thought was I'm going to be all over Miami. And then I'm like, it's in Green Bay. Let me check the weather. It's going to be in the 20s. There's going to be some snow chance. And I think you're going to get these narratives built around Tua in cold weather games. I think I already saw something about Tua's excited to prove people wrong that he can't play in the cold. You have the game against the Chiefs last year where the offense looked inept. So I went and looked, and based off of our database, the Dolphins have only played in two games with a start temperature below 45 degrees, going back to when Mike McDaniel became the head coach. The 2022 wildcard game in Buffalo, Skylar Thompson was playing. It wasn't great. The 2023 wildcard game in Kansas City, when Tua was playing. So Tua's only had one of those games with Mike McDaniel as the offensive coordinator. Didn't go well. Chiefs had an elite defense. They were in their best form of the season at that point. Like, I'm not going to buy too much into that. And this is a Miami Dolphins offense that has been elite since Tua came back in week 8. Passing offense specifically. They're top 3 in success rate. They're top 3 in EPA per play. They've been moving the ball. Tua's been putting up big passing yards the last couple weeks. And this is another winnable matchup. Like, this Green Bay defense, you can move the ball against them. The San Francisco offense was completely broken last week with Brandon Allen at quarterback. It was bad weather. Green Bay was able to run all over them. San Francisco didn't have the ball a ton. Like, I don't expect that to be able to be the case with Miami this week. And, like, the lines are still low. Like, Waddle's line's still pretty low. I think it's in the 40s. Tyreek's in the 60s. Johnny Smith, who's become a big part of the offense, is low 40s. And he's actually the guy who's benefited the most from some of these too high coverages that I think we're going to see a lot of from Green Bay. Miami naturally sees more of those than any other defense in the league just because of defenses having to kind of put a safety net over the top with the speed that they have. And Green Bay's top 6-7 in cover 2 rate this year. So I think you see a decent amount of that. And it's another good Jonnu Smith spot, but really any of these Miami receivers, the core pieces, Hill, Waddle, Achane, like, I can see taking shots on any of them.
Yeah. No, I'm with you here on all fronts. Not disagreeing, you're not great. We basically had, there's almost no sample of Tua and the cold. And like, what really you're capturing is, like, it is oftentimes coldest in January. Shocking. The Dolphins have been in the playoffs a bunch. That means that they're going to be playing on the road against playoff teams. They're in the playoffs probably because their defense is pretty good. So you're really just capturing like something that is different than Tua playing in the cold, but other confounding factors. So I'm with you. If that is kind of going into this price at all, I'm very happy about that. I think that's kind of as marginal as marginal things can come in the NFL. And to your point, this is a Packers defense that has been bad over the last 4 or 5 weeks. They're generating, like, even against the Niners, right? They like put up this, they won 38-10. They're like, per play efficiency metrics were bad. They had a 16% explosive play rate allowed. They generated a ton of turnovers. Christian McCaffrey fumbles, kind of fluky interceptions. This is a defense that is bottom 10 in recently in yards per attempt, EPA, success rate, pressure rate, anything you want to kind of throw out there. And the Dolphins can mitigate a lot of that because Tua gets rid of the ball so quickly. They've been bad defending explosive plays. And what really I think to highlight this point is that they force everything to the middle of the field also. They have they're basically tied for first in middle of the field throws allowed, and this is an area where Miami has excelled. They're top 5 with Tua attacking the middle of the field. They've been top 5 every single year of the Tua McDaniel era. This is still how you can kind of hit. They might not have the vertical threat. I mean, that can happen on any one given play where you can break a 70-yard touchdown, even if there are only 4 plays like that where you get single coverage on the outside. But where a lot of Miami's explosiveness comes from is these crossers in the middle of the field. And you want to talk about a cold game, actually. I just have that vision of Tua hitting Jalen Waddle in the snow in Buffalo, where it was snow on the field. It wasn't actually snowing at the time. On like middle of the field crosser, he takes it, you know, an additional 70 yards. Like, that is the Dolphins offense at its best. And that's exactly where Green Bay has struggled. And I think that actually the matchup is set up pretty well. And even if you want to just look at it from like, I'm a little bit puzzled by the pricing of this game, because from like any kind of efficiency metric you look at basically since Tua has been back, or I should say it differently. If you look at the full season metrics for these teams, 3.5-point spread makes sense. Then once you start to just like take the sample of games in which Tua is playing, like these two teams have like basically been the same from an efficiency perspective. by like kind of anything you want to look at that captures overall performance. Like 3 to 3.5, I think is a tricky price. You add in these matchup elements, and I really, really like Miami here. I think these two teams are pretty similar, and Miami, I think, should have their way on offense. And to your point, and we talked about this last week, of like just because Hill and Waddle haven't had those big games, like they had success throwing the ball like to it with an 8 out of 5. But that doesn't mean that they magically like wanted to stop throwing downfield. It's like if that matchup's going to call for a specific game plan, that's what they're going to do. And last week against Miami, they had a ton of explosive plays. They threw the ball way further downfield. And we were talking about how like that matchup calls for that. New England plays a ton of man coverage. They don't have the guys to defend that. It's not as though they're just going to ignore that area of the field. They're just going to take what's given to them. And I think we have another spot here against Green Bay where the middle of the field on those crossing patterns is going to be open. And I think they can very easily break a couple of these plays. And the last point I'll say here is Miami, the first couple of games with Tua back, they were much run heavier than anticipated. They were kind of leaning on the ground game as they were with Tyler Huntley. The past 3 weeks, they are like 5.5% pass relative to expectation. Again, like maybe it's like drawing Tua back in. Maybe it's just a small sample thing. The 5.5% would be second highest pass rate in the NFL aggregated over the course of a season. The numbers right now for Tua's passing props are like basically building in half of that sample. So like if you want to talk about alts, you want to talk about a game where Miami attacks Green Bay, they throw the ball a bunch, they have a lot of success. Like you can get Tua 332, Miami -3, 21-1. Right? He did this last week. I think this is another spot where he can have a very similar game, and especially when you want to add in these wide receivers. Like we know who Hill and Waddle are. They didn't magically get worse. The Dolphins had the opportunity to attack elsewhere with success. There's no reason to think they won't necessarily go back to that method of attack in a matchup where they can have success there. So this is actually my favorite spot of the week. I love the Miami alts here. I think that I'm going on for a bit. But I think that if Green Bay can like really control the game on the ground, Miami's run defense has been pretty good. Green Bay's added the most value on like run heavy drives of any team at like 3.2 points per drive, which is obviously terrific. Running the ball, Miami's been top five defending those types of drives, but they can certainly run on anyone. I think that's kind of the path, the counter to my case, but especially if Miami can slow down this Green Bay passing attack, certainly with the way Chop Robinson's been playing, guy's been an absolute stud at edge for the last month now. I think this is a spot where Miami can have a ton of success. I'm all over these alts.
This is the week, the 700-1. You were just a week early. It's this week.
That's right. Never wrong, just early.
And speaking of Miami pass rushers, they're getting back Shaq Barrett at some point. Probably not this week, but he applied for reinstatement after he retired. So that'll give a lift to their pass rush, theoretically, down the stretch. And I didn't really hit on the Green Bay offense. We didn't hit on it a ton. Like, you talked about it. The Dolphins have been pretty good defending the run. And we kind of know how Green Bay wants to attack. They're the run-heaviest team in the NFL in neutral situations. If you just look at early downs, first three quarters, one-score games, 55% is highest in the NFL. And then in the passing game, a lot of screens and deep shots. Right? They don't really target the intermediate range a ton. It's a lot of shorter throws with yak opportunities, and then Love will launch it downfield. Miami's been great against screens this year. Second-best team at defending screens. They have been susceptible deep a little bit, less so recently. It was really bad early in the year. And like if I'm on something in kind of a bring back in this spot, it would be Watson or Reed hitting something deep against Miami, especially if Miami's putting up a bunch of points. But I'm with you. I like the Miami alts in this spot, specifically around the passing game, alt spreads. I think this line doesn't feel right at 3.5. So we will move on to the Black Friday game, Las Vegas Raiders at the Kansas City Chiefs. Kansas City is 13.5 point favorites, 42.5 point total. And you've kind of been on the Kansas City pass defense getting worse since they lost Jalen Watson. We saw that last week. I was on some Bryce Young alts. Unfortunately, I only went to 200, but and that was still 2-1. But he went for 270, and like, is there a reason why the Raiders can't put up some production through the air in this spot against Kansas City. They get Aiden O'Connell back. I do think that's a slight upgrade over Minshew. Not that O'Connell's great, but I do think that's an upgrade for their passing offense. And they've been historically bad running the ball. They're dead last in any efficiency metric you want to look at running the ball this season, and they basically stopped trying. Since week 8, they have a 74% pass rate, which is highest in the NFL. Obviously, when you're trailing, you're going to pass more. But I think it took them a little bit, but they've realized that they're not running the ball well at all. They shouldn't be running the ball a ton. Running back injuries have hurt there too. So you're going to probably get a high-volume game from the Raiders' passing offense, given that I think Kansas City will be able to move the ball against the Raiders too. So it's another situation where the targets are concentrated. It's Jacoby Myers, it's Brock Bowers, and I think this leans pretty heavily Brock Bowers from a matchup perspective. Kansas City has allowed more yards to tight ends than any other defense in the NFL this year. They play a good amount of two-high coverage. Jacoby Myers' numbers take a dip against those. Brock Bowers stay pretty high. He's playing like one of the best tight ends in the NFL right now. This is a good matchup. I like the Raiders' passing game. I think there's some opportunities to attack that spot here on Friday.
I'm with you again here.
No, we gotta start disagreeing on some stuff, man.
I know. You know, it's tough. I think the kind of counter is that Vegas has been one of the biggest pass funnels, and like almost for Kansas City, I want more plays in Mahomes' hands recently. The more shocking kind of developments of the season is like Mahomes was I don't even know how to describe his sack avoidance. From like he went a period of 190 scrambles in 2022 and 2023 where he did not take a sack. The base rate of a sack is 10%. But like the average quarterback is taking 19 sacks in those situations, and Patrick Mahomes took 0. It was nuts. I don't think we're ever going to see a stretch like that again. And this season, Mahomes' pressure to sack rate has been bad. Like it's not even, he's like below average. It's I don't know what's happening. The Panthers sacked him four times. I don't remember exactly the number. I don't know what's happening there, but it's certainly noteworthy. And just like the strength of the Vegas defense is their pass rush. They've been able to generate plenty of kind of pressure disruption. And in the past, I would have said like, it kind of doesn't even matter. Mahomes is just going to move around. He doesn't take sacks. He'll mitigate the basically only part of the Vegas defense, which themselves is dealing with a lot of injuries. But I'm not so sure anymore. Like Mahomes, at a certain point, we're going to have to kind of like accept that this sack stuff is here to stay. And that kind of worries me about the offense. But then again, I also, if I were the Chiefs and betting them, like it's not a good Raiders pass defense. The teams have really been attacking them via the pass. They have been this big pass funnel, as I was just saying. And it would not be shocking at all for Mahomes to drop back 40 times, get a kind of Mahomes circa 2021 game, even with just like, even if they're not attacking so explosively, and those shots that Worthy are going to hit at some point, that they kind of win via the pass. But I'm with you. Aiden O'Connell can run a competent NFL offense. His numbers in the very, very small sample that we have look much better in year two than year one. And you're right, I've just been on this train of I've bet against the Chiefs pass defense every single week. They've allowed each of the last 5 weeks against basically all bad offenses with the exception of the Bills, where they allowed a 0.25 EPA per play. They're like at 0.1 EPA or worse. Like 0.1 EPA is like well above league average, and this is like the Panthers, the Raiders, the Bucks with no receivers, the Broncos with Bo Nix. Like this is just not, these are not great offenses, and they're all having success. I don't see why this week in particular is going to be so different. I do think the Chiefs probably still win this game, but 13, that's a lot. And like we can probably get just even some like Aiden O'Connell over like Vegas plus 7.5. Like that seems extremely intriguing. Probably be able to get, you know, 3-1 on something like that. I can't certainly cannot lay 13 points with the Chiefs.
I was shocked when I saw 13.5. Like this is a team that just beat the Panthers by 3, or I think it was last second field goal by 3. Like they've barely blown any team out this season. at all. It's even their wins, it's all been one score games for the most part. And I think part of the Mahomes sack thing that you were talking about is like the offense infrastructure is just not that good. Like they're relying on him to buy time. I was looking up stuff for Bo Nix this week for Monday night. They play the Browns. And like the only quarterback with more dropbacks where he moves off a spot than Bo Nix is Patrick Mahomes. And Mahomes, it's not necessarily because there's pressure and he has to move. Sometimes he has to buy time for someone to get open because it's not happening through the normal structure of this offense. And he has to buy an extra second for Kelce or Hopkins to find space and hit him. And that's just kind of how they have to live. So he's taking more sacks as part of that process. The tackle play hasn't been great. That's the problem with the offensive line primarily. And Max Crosby, clearly the Raiders' best pass rusher, that's where he's going to be attacking from. The Chiefs don't do a ton in terms of giving help to their tackles. So, like, I do think the Chiefs win this game. And I think, like, the Raiders' pass defense has been bad enough that I think we'll see the Chiefs have some success. But 13.5 points is too many. I like some of the Raiders' passing odds on the other side. And over 42.5, I kind of like the over on that as well, and just in terms of the game total, because I think the Raiders' offense can have more success than Vegas is factoring in. Any closing thoughts? Are you ready to move on to Sunday a little bit?
Maybe let's do some Sunday.
Let's do it.
Four Island games, though. Whew.
Yeah. So excited. Yeah. We are as you say, blessed. Four Island games before you get to the weekend. So, Texans at Jaguars. Houston's 4.5-point favorites, 43.5-point total. And the Texans offense, like, even after Nico came back, it wasn't clean against Tennessee. I think this is a much more winnable matchup against Jacksonville. We've seen teams torch Jacksonville all year. The 130-1 Lions parlay I hit a couple weeks ago was torching Jacksonville. And I think there's some opportunities for Houston in this spot here, too.
Yeah, I think that's kind of exactly the play of with CJ Stroud in particular, and we got this a lot last season, and we haven't had it as much this year, is like when you get a combo of a team that can't generate pressure and is liable to be beaten deep, like he's torched teams. And from a clean pocket, like he's been great this season. And like certainly with Nico Collins, that number is I think going to be a lot higher kind of if we're projecting it forward. And the Jaguars quick pressure rate over the last like 6 weeks is dead last in the NFL. They're allowing the most explosive plays. Like that's just the perfect combo for Stroud. And like the offensive line was struggling a lot midway through the season. Kenyon Green was sent to the bench. He and his like 12 PFF pass blocking grade, shockingly, the offensive line performed a lot better. I think the Titans defense has been sneaky good all year. They're not allowing a lot of yards. They are, I think, way outperforming kind of on the defensive side, at least their record. And I don't want to read too much into one game there. And the market has certainly sold that this line has moved from 5.5, and perhaps some of that has to do with Trevor Lawrence. I'm not sure what the market was anticipating with his status beforehand. But on the Texans side, it to me seems like a perfect spot for Stroud, for Collins, for Dill. And that's an SGP I'm going to be on. Just give CJ Stroud time and a defense that's vulnerable to be beaten deep. He's going to make you pay for it.
Yeah, I think the biggest issue that we've seen is just the sacks. Right, I know as of a couple weeks ago, Stroud had lost more yards on sacks than any other quarterback in the NFL. And when you're looking at the Jacksonville defense, you do at least have some talent on that defensive front that you have to worry about with Josh Hines Allen and Traylon Walker. We've seen teams torch Jacksonville all year. I don't think that's going to change. And on the Jacksonville offensive side, this offense with Mac Jones has just been kind of brutal. Right, in some not terrible matchups. I don't think that's going to get any better. This is a good Texans defense. It has talent at all three levels. And, yeah, 4.5, it feels like one of the better spreads on Sunday for Houston.
Yeah, definitely going to want to monitor the Trevor Lawrence injury status there. But certainly this is Mac Jones. That's something I'll be all over.
Yeah, I wasn't even I kind of just assumed. I hadn't seen the injury report. I didn't know if Lawrence was going to be back for this one.
Yeah, I think he was practicing. And I don't know what type of practice. Maybe it was like estimated that he would practice or he's doing some throwing. Who knows? Also, Doug Peterson is like notoriously the least reliable coach when it comes to player injuries. So we will definitely see. I got to assume, based on the market's pricing, that Trevor Lawrence has some decent probability of playing. Yeah. If this is 4.5 with Mac Jones,
that's a hammer.
I don't know, man.
That's a hammer. The other, speaking of Doug Peterson, did you see the report that they had made changes during the bye week that were not to be disclosed, whatever that means? So they're cooking over there. Doug Peterson's cooking. They're going to get the season back on track for sure. The Pittsburgh Steelers at Cincinnati Bengals, next game we wanted to hit. Pittsburgh coming off a disappointing loss on Thursday night to Cleveland. We talked about that game going into last week, and like the Russell Wilson passing stuff, that held true. They hit some explosives. He went for, 270-something yards. It just wasn't the pickings necessarily, but their passing offense showed life. And this is a Bengals defense where it's really struggled pretty much throughout the year, both against the run and against the pass. But on the other side, the Bengals can contest Pittsburgh's defense better than we've seen most offenses against them this year. So, interesting game. The Bengals come in as 2.5-point favorites. That's -120 from what I saw. So it's kind of leaning towards that 3 in the field goal, which I think is the line some other places. So Bengals getting a full field goal at home, 46.5-point total. What are your thoughts here?
Yeah, I think that the Pittsburgh offense certainly has ceiling in this spot. And like this is a great matchup for them to be able to kind of go with the run heavy approach. And then kind of throw downfield. The Bengals have not done a great job defending boundary receivers. They allow plenty of explosives. Like, this is the spot for Wilson to connect. And it's just, it gets back to a lot of kind of the same points that we've touched on the last couple of weeks of Russell Wilson is so reliant on the deep ball for his success. The entirety of his EPA gain is on deep passes. Like, he's generating nothing outside of that. And that's just naturally volatile because it's only going to be a couple of passes a game, and those are very high value. And sure, he's got a better chance of hitting those than your average quarterback. And he and Pickens are a great combo there. But the degree to which he's been successful is probably not sustainable. And even still, we saw a case where like they hit on a bunch of deep balls and it still wasn't enough against the Browns. And on the other side of the ball, what particularly intrigues me about this matchup is Pittsburgh plays a ton of man coverage. I think it's the second highest rate in the NFL, and certainly as of late, it's been that way. Joey Porter's been dominant as a cover corner. He's like 90th percentile kind of in separation prevented. When you start to get to the cornerbacks 2, 3, and 4, none of them are above like 33rd percentile. You can kind of get away with that against teams that don't have great receivers. If you've got a man up, one of T. Higgins or Jamar Chase, with a like pretty bad corner, it's not a recipe for success. And I think the Steelers can kind of hide that against teams that don't have elite or like a couple of elite talent, wide receiver talent, as the Bengals do. And I think they're in a sneaky good spot to kind of mitigate what Pittsburgh can do defensively. And like Nick Herbig's been a revelation for this team. T.J. Watt's not even having a great year. He's being double teamed a ton. And like Alex Highsmith being out shouldn't matter a lot, but Nick Herbig is like second in PFF grade and like neutral pass rush situations. Like, the guy is absolutely wrecking games when healthy. But I still think this is a spot where Cincinnati can do some damage. And it just, to me, when I think about kind of the range of outcomes of this game, it Pittsburgh is just so naturally volatile in offense. And they rely so much on their defense. And Cincinnati has been so, so good on offense week in and week out. It's been the defense that's the problem. I think they're going to be able to score. And certainly when accounting for the matchup, I think they should have some pathway. I'll be expecting first, they're giving Chase Brown, talk about distribution of touches. This is a team that's basically operating through four guys. It's like Joe Burrow, T. Higgins, Jamar Chase, Chase Brown, and then like don't know, Mike Gesicki was getting some run there.
The tight end is dealing with injury. The tight end is kind of a pick your adventure each week.
Exactly. Jermaine Burton gets a 40-yard one-on-one ball that he never catches every week, but like this is a very narrow, certainly appealing for from like a DFS point of view. I'll throw that out there, but yeah, I just to kind of recap the bets here. I like Cincinnati. I like the over first off, just because I think Cincinnati's going to have some success, and certainly there's a case for the alts if Pittsburgh can push the pace of play and generate a couple of explosives. But I like Cincinnati in this one as well, and I think I'll be building some SGPs. We'll see where the market opens here, because I mean Burrow's props have been very, very high. Perhaps there's some kind of downgrade given the matchup against the defense that has been good so far this season. But it's a spot I'll be looking to attack.
Yeah, it's a winnable matchup for the Bengals. The Steelers defense has been awesome this year, but we've talked about they only play one way. They're going to be in single high more than pretty much any defense in the league. They're going to play a lot of man coverage, going to play a lot of cover three. And the Bengals, that's not something they see a ton. They're kind of in that Miami range where teams throw a lot of too high at them. And I don't think Pittsburgh is going to change up their game plan playing against Cincinnati. And especially if Porter's one of these guys who Tomlin's talked about it, Porter's talked about it, like in certain situations, they will shadow him. I don't know if this is one of them. I don't have the numbers on hand if Porter traveled with Chase last year or if Higgins and Chase were both on the field in those games. But especially if Porter is moving with Chase, then this is a spot that Higgins should win in, right? And you're going to get lower lines than you are for Jamar Chase. So that's something that I will be looking for. I think the counter argument in this spot with how the Bengals passing offense doesn't hit is we get a game like Green Bay San Francisco last week where the Steelers just take the air out of the ball with the run game, have a super high time of possession, and then when the Bengals are on offense, the offensive line against this pass rush is concerning, right? I think the wide receivers secondary matchups kind of favor Cincinnati, but defensive line, offensive line certainly favors Pittsburgh. You talked about Herbig, like even without Highsmith, I think when he got hurt, it was initially like a 2 to 4 week time frame. So I haven't seen practice reports for him this week, but we'll probably be coming back soon, if not this game. But even without him, Nick Herbig's playing extremely well. They go out and they trade for Preston Smith, who is a competent veteran that can give you good snaps on that defensive line with TJ Watt, with Cam Hayward, with Keanu Benton. Like there's a scenario here where Burrow's under duress, Steelers are controlling the game on the ground and hitting some of these deep shots. But I think in general, I agree with you that it sets up well for Cincinnati to have some opportunity in the passing game. I think that's all the games that we have covered. Any closing thoughts for you? Any other spots that you like briefly?
I think, yeah. The only other spot I'd talk about is, I think, Chargers Falcons. All right, Justin Herbert's been the best in the NFL, certainly by our numbers, from a clean pocket. And Atlanta just can't generate any pass rush. I know Darnell Mooney left with a hamstring injury. They said his injury is not serious. We're recording this on Tuesday. I'm not sure his status, but I think that injury matters a lot given the lack of depth that the Falcons have at receiver. But 1.5, the Chargers are a really good team. And I think the defense is very good. As we talked about so often, like the Ravens are a house on offense. There's not much that you can do to kind of stop them, but like the Chargers are still a really good unit, and I think their offense has just like really let Herbert ride. And like I don't love to read too much into just like what coaches are saying, and coach speak is not great, but when the stated preference of what coaches want to do, and like Jim Harbaugh has said basically every week, like Justin Herbert's the best quarterback he's ever been around. He's the greatest this, the greatest that. When the stated preference matches the revealed preference, and like he started saying this in like week 6, week 7, week 8, week 9, and it's every week if you listen to his pressers. It's unbelievable. The guy is in love with Justin Herbert. And that matches kind of how their offense is played, of just like they went from an extreme run heavy team to an extreme pass heavy team. And maybe if Quentin Johnson can catch the ball, that would help the passing outcomes a bit more. But leaning into Justin Herbert in a spot where I think he should have success because he's so good when kept clean and the Falcons can't generate pressure, that's a spot I'm on. Chargers 1.5. Herbert Alts, Herbert everything. They're just letting, they're going to live and die by Herbert. And I think it's about time that the Chargers, what is this, year four, year five, like Herbert's finally healthy. They're finally just letting him rip. And I'm frankly really excited about the Chargers outlook. I think they can make a lot of noise, and I'm definitely on them in this week against the Falcons. Are just mid. Yeah. They're mid. They don't produce anything that really scares me, and I think the Chargers are a really good team.
Don't get pass rush. They've been getting torched in coverage. Like it sets up well, and the Herbert stuff, that's like they ran the clip on Sunday Night Football a couple weeks ago where Jim Harbaugh is like, Alex Smith, best quarterback in the world, Colin Kaepernick, best quarterback in the world, JJ McCarthy, best quarterback in the world. And but Herbert is playing like legitimately top three, top five ball this year at the position, and it's cool to see them lean into it. He's more confident using his legs the last couple weeks too, quick to scramble, kind of like we were talking about with Caleb Williams. And I've been fading the Chargers defense a little bit the last couple weeks with the Bengals, with the Ravens, but Falcons offense it's been okay, but it doesn't really scare me a ton, and the Chargers have been playing significantly better on that side of the ball under Jesse Minner, so I'm in line with you there.
Yeah, I got one last question for you, because I didn't know that the two of us were both sickos who played some Bryce Young alts last week. I had an 85 to 1 Bryce Young. I think it was 250 with attempts in Carolina -3. And I knew once Mahomes got the ball back, it was done. But that one had some real life. Are we going back to the well against Tampa? 6.5.
Bryce Young's been playing well. Bryce and then the Tampa defense
so well.
Yeah, it's an opportunity to fade the Tampa defensive performance last week against Tommy DeVito. So I'm not going to say no. If we're gonna roll out some Bryce Young alts, I'm kind of disappointed I didn't go harder last week. All I had was a +200 Bryce Young. 200 plus yards, so I didn't really capture a ton there. But if we're gonna go in on Tampa this week, I'm down.
We're riding.
Let's do it. Everyone, enjoy your Thanksgiving. Enjoy your holiday weekend. One of the best football weekends of the year. Forge you to Fort Gang. This is Ben Lindsay. We'll be back with you next week.